You're listening to Around Comics. Watching before Watchmen, Dr. Manhattan, number one. Welcome back to Around Comics. This is another episode of Watching Before Watchmen. This episode, we are going to speak about Dr. Manhattan number one. I am Sal.
I am Braxton.
And if you're not familiar with what Watching Before Watchmen is, basically we are taking a hard look, a hard-boiled detective eye at all of the Watching Before Watchmen books, every single issue. We're going to talk about them. We're going to see if they are any damn good or not. Because, quite frankly, when the whole Watchmen, before Watchmen thing was announced, there was just uproar. It was blasphemy. The masses cried out. And I just thought, you know what?
We'll go against the grain. We'll actually read them.
Yeah, and try and judge them without bias and on their own merits. And that's what we've tried to do, and we've done every single issue that has come out up to this point, and now we're on to Dr. Manhattan by J. Michael Straczynski and Adam Hughes.
Yeah.
With covers by Adam Hughes and J. Michael Straczynski. No, J. Michael Straczynski did not do a cover. Adam Hughes did a cover, Paul Pope did a cover, and of course Jim Lee did a cover.
Of course, Jim Lee.
And I will say that the Jim Lee cover is my least favorite of the three. The Paul Pope one is pretty damn cool. And
yeah, I just saw the Paul Pope one. It is definitely my favorite.
And the Adam Hughes one is very nice, too. Adam Hughes, I think, is a very talented artist. He has a very strict line. He has very exact, detailed work. But he's gotten to the point now where it's almost too perfect. Like, he's refined
his line looks like it would take a very long time to his whatever he does. It looks like it was labored over, but not in a bad way. That's typically a bad thing to say about someone's art. Oh, it looks labored over, but his, it's meticulous.
It's with love. I think it's done with love and affection. And he likes to draw pretty girls. Certainly, that's
his specialty.
Yeah, definitely, and that cover represents that because it's Dr. Manhattan, but it's Laurie who is at the forefront of the cover. So, but very lovely, very lovely. The Jim Lee, the Paul Pope one is very cool. It's for people that haven't seen it. It's basically a headshot of Manhattan working with some sort of machinery.
Yeah, it looks like he's using telekinesis, or his. I guess he could do just about any power he wants to do.
Yeah, I mean, as far as we know, he can control all of matter and time and space.
Is God.
He's able to do just about anything he wants. So, but yeah, the cover is him exploding this machine and examining it in this with his powers.
You ever wish you could do that?
Telekinesis would be kind of neat.
Kind of take like, oh crap, that my car's making this funky bumping noise. I don't know what it is. Don't you wish you could just step away from your car, lift it up with your telekinesis, and just bloop, explode it and have all these little parts, and you could, oh, there's the problem right there. My, bolt is rubbing against
my bolt. Wow, you are such a car guy. My bolt.
It's kind of a sexual thing, man.
I didn't know you were such a gearhead, man. You could have said, "Yeah, come on." You didn't learn anything in high school, like auto class, timing chain, my
you
carburetor,
had timing chain, carburetor, lifters,
lifter, something, anything.
Yeah.
My bolt.
A bolt.
No, I think that would be very helpful. I think, to be able to do that. It's never really been one of the ones that I, powers that I really wanted. or really would go like, yeah, that would be awesome. I think, like Charles Xavier level psionic abilities would be pretty sweet. Like to be able to, you know, read everyone's minds and even control.
See, I can't comprehend how that would be. Like, how do you walk up to someone and start reading their mind? I mean, because, you know, human thought is so random that you – it's not like you get a clear sentence from someone, you know?
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I don't know how it would work necessarily, but I would think, you know, we all sort of think the same way. So it, to me, it would sort of be –
You would think what they're thinking. So you would
right. Your brain would be able to comprehend it even if you can't understand how it comprehends it. It's sort of like, you know, we actually see everything upside down, but then our brain flips the images over, you know, right side up and that kind of thing. Like the brain does it without us knowing it. You know, we don't have to think about breathing. Our body just does it. So I think it would kind of be the same thing of I don't, you know, I can't explain. I couldn't sit down and write what your brain is thinking, but my brain would be able to comprehend it because they're the same things.
I dig it.
So that kind of thing, and then being able to sort of like, you know, influence people and control. I'm a bit of a control freak, so.
You would be evil. You would be probably a super
villain. No, I don't think I would be evil necessarily. Here's the thing. I would probably be the worst villain because I would truly believe what I was doing was, you know, right. You know, and that's always your best villains is that, you know, like Lex Luthor thinks what he's doing is the right thing for humanity. It's just he knows better than everyone else. Yeah. And that's, you know, like the great villains all kind of think that. Like they don't think they're bad. You know what I mean? Like, they're not bad people. They're doing the right thing. They just know better than you. And that's, you know, that's sort of me. I'm kind of that way that I feel like I just, well, I'm right. So I'm just going to make sure it's done the right way, and then we'll be fine. But my intentions would be good. Like, I would want to help people out, but, you know, I don't know if I could or not. I'm not sure how.
I'm not sure how that would pan out.
Well, I think it would be pretty difficult to not abuse, you know, that kind of power or you know, like Dr. Manhattan level power. Like, how do you not abuse that? I think it would almost be impossible on some level to not take advantage of that. And, you know, but maybe I'm just evil. Maybe deep down inside I'm just an evil character.
I definitely think so. But let's
– Thanks. Thank you for that. I really appreciate that, by the way.
I'm joking. So let's get into it. What do we got here in this Dr. Manhattan issue 1?
Well, before we get there, I do want to warn people that spoilers will be involved in this. We are going to go deep into the book and talk about everything. So if you haven't read it yet, please go and read it and then come back. Or if you don't care, just go ahead and listen. And also, don't want to slight
our sponsors.
Yeah, this episode is brought to you by Discount Comic Book Service.
Citizens of Earth, listen carefully to my words. The words of greatness, the words of doom. I am the supreme ruler of the sovereign nation of Latveria. Here, my people need not your foolish children's books for entertainment. Comic books filled with moronic tales of spandex-clad heroes. I would never allow their minds to be polluted with such drivel. But if I did, I would suggest... Nay, I would command they patronize this discount comic book service. How idiotic this company must be to offer such low prices. 35 to 75% off? The fools! They insult Doom with their utter lack of business acumen. 50% off hardcovers and DC's new 52 titles? Marvel Now pre-orders up to 75% off? You make it all too easy, DCB service. Even a dolt like Reed Richards and his band of misfits could defeat the likes of you. Go now, you cretins, I command you. Save your pennies and fill your minds with tales of fantasy and heroes. It will only soften them and make it that much easier for Doom to enslave mankind and take his rightful place as ruler of the world!
And away we go. Now we're we're back, and thank you, Discount Comic Book Service, for allowing us to continue in your benevolent empire. All right, let's get into this. We've wasted enough time on this. Should we talk about? We didn't talk about Jim Lee too much, but all right, never mind. We don't need to. All right, Dr. Manhattan. Basically, this issue opens up at the funeral of Edward Blake from the original 12-issue Watchmen miniseries.
Yeah.
It's the same scene, the same moment in time, essentially, of when Manhattan actually, in Watchmen, he starts to contemplate the past and certain things. And basically the same thing happens here, although we see a different memory.
Set of contemplations.
Yeah, it's a different set of memories. And he starts to think about this. Well, there's a theme involved here of a box. And it starts with the coffin, and he talks about there's a mystery in this box, and only he understands what it is. And then he starts to think about other boxes in his life, and we travel back to Germany, August 14th, 1938, when he's a 9-year-old boy, and he's unwrapping a birthday present from his father. And this is one of the reasons that I love this issue, that this gets right into the sort of quantum physics debates and philosophical
Schrodinger's cat.
And he's opening the box, and he's thinking about how before he opens it, anything could possibly exist. There's any possibility in that box. And then he goes into the multiple Earth theory, which if you're not familiar with physics at all, and I am not a physics expert. I've never taken a physics class in my life, but I've read some information on physics.
Yeah, I've read on Schrodinger's cat and that whole paradox and alternate realities, and you know, I really don't know where that came from. I mean, how did we get to that scenario? I mean, is that something that if you study an atom will do something like that, and so by looking at the atom, we get this scenario of hey, you know what? There could be a world where I open the closet and.
Well, it's all theory. It's all, you know, it's different.
Yeah, but that is the wackiest theory to come up with.
Well, but there are absolutely particles. There are bits of matter, and there are things that it is impossible to view in quantum physics because upon viewing them, they change. And that's sort of the idea of, I mean, there's a difference between like Schrodinger's cat is one thing, and then the observer effect is something different.
How do you know they change if you didn't see them prior to?
Because you can measure things prior to. You can't.
But measuring something is essentially knowledge of.
Listen,
state.
I'm not a physics.
I'm not either. We could wind up as aloof as Dr. Manhattan by the time you know where we're staring at water trickling down a cup and. For 2 hours. I don't know about Schrodinger's cat and all this crazy stuff. And I like it as far as a fictional tool, but when this reality of it is just explodes my brain.
Think about like heat, okay? A standard like thermometer, like a glass thermometer. Okay,
right.
you take your temperature with that, right?
Right, right.
You put it in your mouth, and your body temperature heats up the mercury in the thermometer, and that measures your temperature. Correct.
Right, right.
Okay, but in doing so, on a quantum level, on a tiny, 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 tiny level, you have actually changed the temperature of the body you are measuring because you've transferred heat from your mouth into the thermometer. That is the observer effect. You can't take the temperature without actually changing it. So the temperature before you put the thermometer and the temperature you measure are two different things. Now you know that, because of, you know, just physics. But you can't actually take the temperature in that way without changing the temperature of the body. It's at a minute level, but you're still changing the temperature. You know what I mean? So that's one sort of example a little more.
Yeah, but there's a heightened temperature already there, which is why you took the temperature in the first place.
Right. Well, I don't know what you're saying.
So apparently that temperature is, let's say, what, over 99 degrees?
Right.
So you already know that.
But the quantum physics all deals with things on such a minute level that that's what they're talking about. Like, when you're dealing with things on such a tiny level, it's impossible to sometimes, you know, judge them or measure them without changing them because you're changing it on, you know, when you take someone's temperature, say your temperature is 96.8, but it's really like 98.643795, you know, however
far
you can measure it. You put the thermometer in your mouth and the temperature changes because you transfer heat from the mouth to the thermometer. Now it's 98.654327, you know, and it's changed 1/1,000,000th of a percent, but it's still changed. You know what I mean? So you're dealing with such tiny, minute fractions of data, but you're still changing them by interacting with them. And that's sort of the observer effect. That's what he's talking about here. You know, he sort of folds the observer effect into the multiple universe theory, which is that every time you make a decision or you know, every
it
time
splits into
alternate reality, we're constantly creating alternate realities, and the one you're in right now is just dependent on the choice you made, you know, 1/1,000,000th of a millisecond earlier. So there's an infinite amount of choices, there's an infinite amount of worlds, there's an infinite amount of decisions. It's hard to get your head around it, but that's
the deal.
That's the deal. That's, you know, sort of what he's dealing with here. Now, you know, Straczynski obviously probably, you know, isn't a physicist, you know,
No, he's dealing with the topical.
Yeah, the basic theories of stuff and It's really heady stuff. I mean, that's why the smartest people in the world are dealing with it and trying to figure this out. And it's all, you know, a lot of it is trying to confirm theories and eliminate other theories. And, you know, physics is a really interesting thing. And right now is a pretty exciting time. I mean, with the God particle now being examined and rotating a bit around like unified field theory and stuff that goes back way, like, you know, 40, 50, 60, 70 years, that, you know, back to Einstein and guys like that were trying to Heisenberg and, you know, trying to figure out some of this stuff that still isn't figured out and they're still trying to determine it. So a lot of this stuff is just theory. It hasn't been proven, obviously, that we live in multiple universes or alternate realities or any of that stuff. That, you know, they're all theories, but mathematically you can
kind of make sense of it.
Yeah, and you can show evidence that the possibility exists for some of these theories, and they're getting closer and closer to that kind of stuff. So
basically what happens, he gets a present from his family and he goes through the multiple things that could be in the box.
What's in the box?
Yeah.
That's, you know, what I keep thinking about.
When I was reading this, I was thinking, I wonder who's going to be the first one to do the Brad Pitt impression, Sal or I. It was Sal.
I beat you to it.
So ultimately, what turned out to be in the box was this beautiful clock, which is actually the floating palace, Mars Palace, that he constructed years later.
Well, yeah, and yeah. It's sort of maybe his rosebud to some degree, but yeah. He gets this clock, and then he immediately then is transferred, or we're transferred, I should say, to a different moment in time where, you know, he is trapped in the particle accelerator.
Intrinsic field
center, whatever the hell, the machine that turns him into Dr. Manhattan. And then we're transported back to him being in college. And, you know, so we're seeing all these different moments in time. And as we know from Manhattan, he exists and can see all of them at the same time. So it's interesting to sort of wonder, you know, why are these moments the ones that we're seeing now, you know? But then,
clearly he's, Straczynski's trying to, you know, show us, I guess maybe the rosebud for the decisions he made in becoming, like, in when he's in college, he's eating some, I guess this is Cracker Jacks or DC,
yeah,
or Watchmen's versions of Cracker Jacks. And of course, there's a prize in Cracker Jacks, and he bites down on a little figurine of a little blue man.
Right.
Well, you know, now we know why he chose to look blue. And again, the clock, and later years, he turns that into a palace on Mars. So.
Right. We're seeing some of the things. We're seeing that his humanity, the moments in time have stayed with him, even though he is so far beyond his own humanity. But what it all sort of leads to is the idea and his theory that accidents don't happen. There is no such thing as an accident. And so the fact that he was turned into Dr. Manhattan is not an accident. And so he's now questioning, why is he here? What is he, and why does he exist? If accidents don't happen, then there's a reason. But what is that reason? And it's,
which I think is a very natural question for Dr. Manhattan at this, you know, ultimately for this character. You know, eventually he's going to wonder why he is, why him, why does he exist? What's the purpose of it all? You know, even us lesser humans come to that question.
Well, and it also suggests that the, you know, the climax of Watchmen, of him, you know, basically not stopping Adrian, is not the reason he exists. You know what I mean? Like, initially he's able to stop everything from happening and stop Adrian from killing millions of people and doing what he was doing, but he makes a decision that it's better for humanity if he doesn't stop him. So that is, you know, that sort of, you know, it's sort of like there's no reason for him to be there necessarily, because he doesn't, and ultimately he doesn't do anything. You know, it's
so
not
you
like
think that so far Straczynski's characterization of Dr. Manhattan is in keeping with Alan Moore's Watchmen of,
yeah, I think so. I also think he's a really difficult character to,
oh god, immensely
to write, because, you know, like even now, you know, he's asking why am I what I am, you know, why do I exist? But we also know that he can see his own future,
and that's what makes him such a hard character to write, is that his non-linear,
right,
perception of things.
Very difficult. But I think, you know, there's ways around that, and, you know, we'll have to see where this goes. But anyway, you know, this sequence basically leads us back to Mars and him with
looking at the photograph of him and Janie.
Right, and dropping
great,
it. And
great illustration, by the way. I mean, just come off of the story for a moment and look at Adam Hughes's interiors. I don't know if he'd used Photoshop to some degree, but the picture and the panel where the picture was taken, they look almost identical, except,
well, I would imagine he did the panel first and then Photoshopped it into the picture. I mean, that would, if he
did. Well, even if he did, it still doesn't look like he simply did that. I mean, it looks,
well,
like,
well, no, he desaturated a bit. He skewed it.
I'm not just speaking of the colors, but yeah, he skewed it. And I would think that he even...
You think he drew it twice? I don't think so. Well, maybe it's too exact. It's too perfect.
Skewed it a bit.
Yeah, I think he just skewed it. He desaturated it a bit, and I mean, it's too exact. To why would you do that? Like, that doesn't make any sense in this day and age to sit there and.
You're right. That John Osterman, though, he looks like somebody specific. I wonder if Adam Hughes used actors or someone cast his characters here.
I mean, I don't know at all about his process, really, but looking at his work, I would think he relies on photo reference. I mean, his characters just, they look that way at least, but maybe not. I don't know. It's hard to say. All right, but so the next sequence now, the majority of this issue is flashbacks, Manhattan flashing to different points in time. And the next one is, now he's in 1960, he's at a fundraiser for the Minutemen, and he's sort of standing off to the side with the original Night Owl, Hollis Mason, and Hollis is talking to him, drinking, and sort of confessing to him that he feels like he's decided that that's enough, he's done. And this, I would assume, is the moment in time where Hollis has decided it because of Manhattan. And as we learned in the original Watchmen, is like Hollis decided to retire when Dr. Manhattan kind of came on the scene because he just figured he was obsolete. Like, there's no point to him doing it any longer when a god basically walks the earth. So this seems like that moment. But I give Straczynski credit. Like, it wasn't on the nose. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't.
Well,
you know.
Isn't this a scene from Watchmen, the party where.
I don't remember this scene.
I kind of do recall a scene where there's a function or whatever, and Manhattan's wearing the fully.
Well, there definitely was that, suit. But that was a Minutemen meeting. I don't remember.
No, not that. I don't know. It might have. It was definitely a time in the book where Hollis Mason was. Either talking about things in his book or he was writing.
I don't remember, possibly.
But, I mean, this is, this is from Watchmen. I mean, this scene, this era, this time and everything.
Then we go back a little bit further, and before he's Dr. Manhattan, it's March 3rd, 1949, and he is in what looks to be a library. It looks to be a college student or maybe high school. I'm not sure at this point. And he's working on a watch, it looks like, in the library. And a very lovely young girl comes up to him and
gives him the Adam Hughes.
Get him, yeah, exactly. You know,
where the
boobs
wrist,
are in front.
Wrist down and the boobs are outside of the arms.
Yeah, and is trying to tempt him to come to a little hike down by the lake, kind of thing. A very 1950s, I guess. Kind of a teenager thing to do, and he basically tells her no. He has work to do, and we see it. Like, I liked this scene because, you know, Manhattan is very aloof and very detached from humanity when we see him in Watchmen.
Yeah, he doesn't give in to the desires of average man, you know, or man in general. He's kind of beyond that.
But we see that maybe he was sort of beyond that, or, you know, to some degree before he ever became Manhattan. You know, that
perhaps.
So so now we move to 1959, and he is at the test facility in the flats, the Gila Flats. Gila Flats. I don't know how you pronounce.
Sure.
That. And they're sort of showing him around the facilities, and we see the intrinsic field experiment box. What's in the box? And he has a weird sense of deja vu at that moment. And this is an interesting...
it's a departure.
Yeah, because now he sees that he can remember... Like, this brings up the theory that he already existed as Manhattan before he went into that box.
Yeah, because in Watchmen, I believe he only saw everything
forward from that point. From
that point on, he saw everything as one.
Right. And there was that moment between him being Dr. Manhattan and him being John Osterman. And now it seems like that moment sort of is blurred. We're not sure. Okay. And so he can see every moment before and after that, which is interesting. It works with the whole sort of, you know, Schrodinger's cat theory and all that he's already brought into this. Then we move on to 1966. He's at the Crime Busters meeting that we've seen multiple times now. And this, I have to bring this part up. We see Dollar Bill, or not Dollar Bill. What's the other guy's name?
Captain Metropolis.
Metropolis pulling the names out of the hat, as we saw in the Night Owl book, correct?
Yep.
And we see him pull out the partners of Manhattan and Rorschach, and then the Rorschach change to Laurie, Silk Spectre. So that Manhattan and Silk Spectre were teamed up. And then we see how Manhattan did that on purpose. He changed that time. He changed that moment in time to split realities so that he was not partnered up with the comedian, but he was partnered up with Silk Spectre. And I think, for one, I have to give credit to Straczynski, because when we read this in Night Owl, I kind of balked at it, because I was like, why would Manhattan do that? Like, that seems very strange, emotional thing for him to do, like a very petty thing for a god to do at that point.
Well,
but now I see what he was trying to convey, and I think what he suggests in this now is that the reason he did it is because it had to be done. Like, it already existed. And if we go to Watchmen, we see that John comes back from Mars because of Laurie and the relationship that they have. And she, her existence is what triggers him to still be connected to Earth, to humanity. At that moment in time, you know, like, it could have gone either way.
Okay, so he didn't do that out of
lust. It wasn't out of sexual. It was because it.
Yeah, do you not think Alan Moore would have umbrage with that?
Why? I think it makes perfect sense.
In his story, well, let's see. Wait a minute. In Watchmen, he didn't switch the chits like that.
Well, it was never really.
Alan Moore had laid out in Watchmen that Dr. Manhattan left Janie, was it Slater? Left her because she was getting older.
No, I disagree. I think, here's the thing. If you go back and read that section, what you will see is that there are two sides to it. There's a paradox in Manhattan at that moment. On the one side, he talks about how he sees how she's getting older and how Laurie is young and beautiful, and his humanity is attracted to that. But on the other side of it, there's still that detachment and sort of that inevitability. It's inevitable that he is with Laurie. That is his future. He already sees it. That's what I'm getting at too with this, is that he already knows what's going to happen in the future. He knows that he has to have a relationship. Now, he doesn't know the whole thing with Adrian Veidt, because Veidt had...
Do you think Janie Slater's going to hear all of that quantum mumbo-jumbo? Look, baby, I'm sorry. It was, you know what? It was laid out, and it was destined to happen. I was destined to be with this young...
Well, no, he doesn't sit there and
hot.
He doesn't tell her that. But, I mean, even in the scene, he says... here, she asked him, you did something so you'd be assigned to her, didn't you? And he said, no, in this quantum reality, I was always paired up with her tonight. And that's the point, is that at that point in time, he didn't do anything to change it. It already exists. Every moment in time, future and past for him already exists simultaneously. So there is no
poor Janie. Poor Janie's
But that doesn't matter. We're looking at it from Manhattan's point of view. But I have to give Straczynski credit, because initially when we read it in Night Owl, it didn't make much sense to me. And now I see that what he was doing with it in this, it makes complete sense to me, and I think it was very well done. That, and I think it perfectly keeps in line with the original Watchmen. I don't think there's any, it gives you the real reason why he left her for Laurie. It wasn't just a simple, sort of middle-aged guy having a crisis and, going with a young girl. That wasn't what it was. It was destiny. It was that reality, you know what I mean? Like, that was the reality that he already chose. Kind of heady, kind of.
It is, but, that destiny, that quantum reality that was meant to be also falls in line with you chasing a younger, hotter, steamier woman.
Well, luckily enough for him, it did. But as we see later on, he doesn't really care about that. Like, he doesn't,
Well, see, I had in my mind, we'll get to this when we go through that. What did you think of the book discussion? But this is not what I wanted from Dr. Manhattan, this where we're heading here.
Well, all right. Okay. Well, let's hold that off. Let's hold off until the... okay. Well, all right. So anyway, we see that happen, and then we see, the Crime Busters thing.
And it's Killer Page with JFK and Lyndon Johnson. Oh, man, that's just... They don't look photo referenced, but they look...
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, before that, the Crime Busters meeting breaks, falls apart. We see Janie and him argue, and then all of a sudden we see this it's a 9-panel grid, and it's a very quick flash forward.
Yeah,
we see a lot of different things. We see Night Owl quit being Night Owl. We see JFK. Sending him to Vietnam. We see Janie break up with him. We see a very steamy Laurie telling him that she loves him. We see LBJ
basically saying, hey, look, son. Hey, man, look. With them kind of powers, this country needs you. We're just going to have to send you right on in.
And then the new Night Owl, being affable, I guess, and then Rorschach, and then a bloody smiley face indicating the death of Eddie Blake. And it's all these gears, all these things that we've already seen happen, and he's already seen happen, all leading him to Mars. But at the same time, still wondering why. What is the point of all of this? Why are all these, he knows that these moments in time have significance, but what significance and why? And then we flash back to 1959 and a scene with his father being informed that his son has been killed in an intrinsic field generator. And his father, being very upset and blaming them and telling them they need to fix him, they need to put him back together.
He also says he's not dead.
He's not, yeah, his father is very adamant in the fact that he's not dead. He's not dead. You need to fix it.
And then he goes back in November 10th, 1959. He puts some stuff back together, much like a Swiss clock.
As we've seen before, the nervous system and the musculature and skeletal and everything, blah, blah, blah. And then the next scene is interesting. He visits his father on his deathbed. And at this point he is Manhattan, and he comes to visit his
I guess his father had a bit of a breakdown because he learned of his son's demise.
Right.
You think so?
That's what it seems as if. And his son, now he's saying his son is dead. His son is dead. He doesn't, they've taken him from me. So yeah, it's an interesting thing because at one point he's saying, no, he's not dead. He's not dead. And then when he sees Manhattan, he realizes he is gone. He is dead because this is not my son. So it's that change again from human to superhuman and something different. And then he starts talking about that. He is John, but he's not John. John became him. John's perspective and his history informed him, maybe helped create him, but now he is something else. He is no longer John Osterman. He is Dr. Manhattan, which is something else completely from humanity. But he doesn't know what. And it's interesting that this, this is the universal question. Why am I here? You know, everyone wonders, why are we here? Why are we here? And to see, essentially a god asking that same question is something so human, even though we know he's not human any longer. And it leads him to make a decision to do something that he hasn't done before, which is to ride the timeline back before he was transformed into Dr. Manhattan in hopes of understanding why he was.
Yeah, because, and he did that. It wasn't an easy thing to do, apparently.
Yeah. For whatever reason, this has sort of led him to understand that he can do this, and he decides that that's what he's going to do because he needs to answer these questions. So he goes back in time, and now he is at the Gila Flats, and he sees himself walking with, I want to call him Foggy, because he reminds me of Foggy Nelson, the Matt Murdock.
Wally. Is it Wally?
Yeah, I think it is Wally. And it's the moment where he had forgotten Jenny's watch and his jacket in the intrinsic field generator. So he follows himself in, and he sees the clock, and he's waiting to see the moment where he gets trapped in there and turned into Manhattan. But
it did not happen.
It doesn't happen. And
he always said in this book, he had mentioned a couple times how he thought he had time. He thought he had plenty of time to get those things, which is why, why would you even go in this crazy intrinsic field generator that's going to, vaporize.
Right, it's this
you.
Incredibly dangerous thing. You know exactly every detail.
I want a good 2-hour buff for you.
I'm not 15 seconds. There's no way I'm taking that chance. Like, hey, it's a watch. I'll get another one. What I mean? Like, there's no way. But he felt like it was plenty of time to go in there. And evidently, at least in this reality, whichever one that he's traveled back to, it was enough time because John Osterman walks in and grabs the jacket and walks out whistling Dixie and
leaves him
wondering
what's in the box.
What's in the box? And that's how it ends. And I was blown away by that. I when I got to that moment, I went, holy shit. Because I thought it was such a cool idea to have him go back in time and now essentially, he does not exist. The moment where he was created doesn't exist, and now he's sort of trapped in some sort of weird state of existence where he was never made. And I think it's...
Well, see, this is why it's such a hard thing to write. I mean, he perceives the times when and the ramifications of his existence. So, this is why this story, for me, I can tell it already, it's not going to go anywhere with me because it's going to leave me asking those questions every single issue. Like, oh, but I thought that he could do blah, blah, blah. I thought that, he could see everything at once. And so how does that pan out?
It is the tough part of writing anything to do with time travel. You know what I mean? Because there's so many holes and quandaries and, what ifs or how comes or, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense because it's fucking time travel. You know what I mean? It's very difficult to...
Time travel is what you do anytime you write a time travel story. I guess, is you pick rules and you stick with those rules, you know?
Right.
And I,
you know, and I feel like he's done that, though. I think
you can do that with this character, I suppose, but he's still, you know, a Rubik's Cube of a character to write.
Yeah, but I don't think, like, I don't feel like this has, I mean, this has created something strange, but, well, you know what? I think, you know, when I didn't do it, now, you know, talking about it, I wish I would have studied a little bit more the moment where he, you know, he kind of drops it on us that, oh, I can, I can go back before, because he kind of, that change, because that's the big change, you know, like we talked about, is that in the original Watchmen, he could see his time. Well, but he still had the memories. He just couldn't travel back to before he was Dr. Manhattan.
I don't know if that was...
it was never really discussed.
Yeah.
He didn't really... I mean, he didn't travel through time in Watchmen, did he? Did he ever actually travel through time? I mean, he...
No, he kind of
viewed
did
it.
Ebenezer Scrooge bit where he's present, kind of, but no one sees him.
Right. So I guess it's the same thing. I mean, in this, he's traveling back in time, but he's traveling back before he was Manhattan to actually observe. Where before it was any of those scenes were memories. They were John Osterman's memories. But now the difference is that when we see him in 1959 and he's thinking about it and being at the Gia Flats project. And they're giving him the tour. He walks into the bestiary, what they call it, the building, you know, where everybody kind of hang, or the, I guess it's like the dorm or whatever. He has the sudden sensation of deja vu. But the deja vu is from the future when he goes back there and it's already deserted, okay?
Mm.
But is he having the deja vu? He's having the deja vu as Manhattan. But he says, in that moment, and in this and every moment in between, I wonder, how is that possible? I had not yet changed into what I am now, but I could still sense myself in the future. Because it was still me, still my consciousness sliding up and down the time stream, still the same quantum observer. So essentially what he's bringing into effect is the idea that he never changed into Dr. Manhattan. He was always going to be Manhattan. He already was Manhattan. And because he can go back and forth in time, you know, the boundaries of I was John Osterman and then I became Dr. Manhattan don't exist because it's all the same thing. It all is happening at the same time. Yeah. You know what I mean? Those moments all exist at the same time.
Mr. Straczynski, if you say so, I'm checking out. You know, I can't. He's got. There's too much. There's too much cerebral information here that you got to digest to get a story.
Oh, see, I love it. This was maybe my favorite Before Watchmen book so far, because and I'll admit it's because it's these sort of quantum theories and, you know, time traveling and alternate reality and universe, you know, it's like these very big ideas that I love thinking about anyway. And
well, I mean, overall, looking at the overall arc of what happened in this issue and where, you know, he changed things at the end like that. I like that. I am interested to see what happens, but I got a feeling nothing's going to ultimately happen.
Well, it can't really. I mean, like, you
know.
No, it can't,
but I mean, he, you know, he, we're
or it can. Because if we observe an alternate reality, it's, he can do whatever he wants, but the reality.
This was a labor intensive issue.
For you, are you saying? You had to labor through it?
I was exhausted the moment. Dr. Manhattan started that whole dialogue with, you know, I watch as a box containing a mystery is lowered into the ground. You know, that
that's the first page.
Yeah, I was exhausted. I just, oh my God, here we go with this. And I knew what I was in for. And
I can, yeah, I can totally see it. I can understand it. It's
what I wanted from Dr. Manhattan. Is
was more blue wanted, dong? You wanted more blue dong?
I wanted more blue dong.
We got a little blue dong. A
little bit. I mean, I wanted to see more John Osterman in the character, which, and you know, hey, maybe this is my misunderstanding of this character, but I always thought, you know, because you heard it over and over in Watchmen from different characters, other people around him, was that he progressed into this
he got colder and colder, more distant, more detached from reality,
becoming, you know what, cosmically aware or whatever. And
right,
so early on, like the moment after he changed into Dr. Manhattan, you know, maybe he was more human than God, for lack of a better term. So I wanted to see more of things that were, you know, a different depiction of him than what they were in.
Well, but the title of the book is Dr. Manhattan, not John Osterman.
Well, I know, but I mean, still, if you're doing before Watchmen, which is also the title of the book, it's before the depiction of Dr. Manhattan when he's this aloof individual who's just about to depart from humanity.
Well, but here's the thing. That moment in time in the beginning, the first page of this book is Eddie Blake's funeral. And if you look at Watchmen,
he
starts to become more and more detached from that point forward. So are we seeing – is this four-issue story going to be the reason that he becomes more and more detached and more cosmically aware? Now, we've already seen him realize something he didn't realize before, which is that he could travel back before he was Dr. Manhattan and observe
– this is a big mess.
It's not a business. It's very well done. It's very well done. It's very.
He can see everything, and you know, non-linear.
No, but it makes perfect sense. Like this is here's the look. Listen, you can look at it. You can look at it that way and try and like delve into the very deep philosophical ideas and theories in this, or you can just look at it from a little more, you know, pulled back view of it and going. He tells you right in the beginning. When you look, you know, in physics, the observing something can change it, okay? And at the end of this book, he goes back in time to observe the moment where he becomes Dr. Manhattan, but in so doing, he has now changed it. That's okay. Essentially what this issue is.
I like
is.
That. Okay. Okay. I like that. But you know what? I do. I honestly like that. This was too much to get there.
Okay.
If I have to have Brian Salazar explain that to me and I can't figure it out on my own, then whoo.
Well, you know, I cannot blame Straczynski for writing a book that is very complex when you're dealing with a character that is essentially.
Oh, sure. I mean, great.
You know what I mean? You know, I could if he. I give him credit for diving into this and really. Getting into the sort of
very good, Sal. I mean, that I like that. That's do you think honestly that's what he was trying to do? Or
oh, absolutely. I have to believe.
So if he had not have gone back to be the observer at that moment, things would have been the way they always were. But because he could go back in time and be this observer that you know, no one can truly be, he actually changed.
The moment in time.
Yeah, but I mean, is it ultimately going to change anything?
I don't know. We got to wait and read it. I mean, to me, getting to that last page when he did that was like, wow, that was awesome because now I have no idea where this is going. Now I don't know what's going to happen. And to me, that's really exciting. And now you have a character that essentially has the powers of a god being lost in time. And how does he get back? How does he get out of it? To me, that's incredibly exciting. And the way that Straczynski did it, I thought was brilliant. To me, I don't understand. It almost makes me want to go back and read Night Owl again, because I don't understand how the guy that wrote Night Owl, which I thought was terrible and so surface.
Why would you do that to yourself?
How he wrote this. Like, I don't understand how it's the same guy. And I think this is the thing that, like, drives people crazy about JMS, is that in one breath he can write something absolutely brilliant, and then the next thing he does is just terrible. And I don't understand how it's possible. I think this issue so far is easily my favorite.
All right. Well, I like that. I like having my own little Brian Salazar to accompany me upon reading this character. But
just sit back and relax. I'll explain it to you.
This is not a fun read. I mean, this was not.
Oh, I disagree.
It wasn't. I mean, as a storyteller, I mean, as a concise, mainline story right to you with this. Sure, you can have a cerebral, heady point, but I just think that this was not
fun.
Fun, yeah. This was not eloquently done for me. Not in my
opinion. I thought it was. Well, I think it's the difference between a painting and a mathematical equation can both be artistic if looked at by different people. You know what I mean? Like, you might have a guy who's a brilliant mathematician look at a Picasso and think it's crap, but he looks at a, theory and sees the brilliance in it. And then you have someone that, doesn't understand the math and just thinks it's gobbledygook, but looks at Picasso and thinks it's genius. You know what I mean? Like, it's just different perspectives.
Well, yeah.
To me,
and
this was
listen,
this
I mean,
is like
anytime you hear a critique from me, I think we're knowledgeable enough about our intake of art that we can critique on something, and we know that hey, look, this. If I say this is bad, it's bad to me, not to everyone else. I'm not overall saying, hey,
yeah,
this is a bad comic. Hey, trust me. It's bad. Don't worry. No, I mean, for me, I didn't enjoy the romp of getting to – and that great story twist that you laid out for me.
I see, and to me it was – like, it was so elegant, like a, it's funny, but like when Matt Hatton is trying to explain to Laurie the beautiful simplicity of, electrons, dancing, or like that's how I see this story. Like, it's this incredibly kind of, yeah. I'm afraid that's basically what my analogy was. Is that yes? I'm trying to talk to a monkey, and I'm trying to explain.
Well, you know what? Look, hey, it is what it is, brother, and I'll take that. But, I don't think that I'm alone.
No, I don't think so at all. I think probably more people will feel the way you feel about it than the way I feel about it. And I'll completely admit, it's just
because. Have you listened to read any other reviews, listened to any other podcast where they talked about this issue?
No.
It seems like most people thought that this was really number one. I keep hearing the same constant criticism, which is that most of the writers are delving into Watchmenville and they're not truly exploring things that happened outside of the the events and that happened in The Watchmen. And this one is another one that's guilty of doing that. So much so that, I mean, we're at the funeral in The Watchmen. We're at the, the intrinsic field.
Well,
which,
I don't know why that necessarily is why is that a bad thing that they're dealing with? I mean, this one, I don't feel like it really deals with too much that happened in Watchmen. It uses those sort of places to delve into minute detail You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, explore different.
He's exploring different facets of those time periods, and I think with Manhattan it makes sense because he exists in so many different times and at one moment in time. You know what I mean? Like, he is experiencing all of those moments in time at the same time. So to pick, you know, pick a thing that we've already seen, a moment in time that we've already seen, and then see a different perspective of it, I think makes sense. But go ahead. What, I mean?
No, I was listening to you, but I don't know. I was just left wanting to explore more of what I thought Dr. Manhattan was someone who was slowly losing his humanity for, you know, this cosmically aware being who throws away, who's not interested in sex, who's not interested in humanity. You know, clearly he was something different before the end of Watch. At the end of Watchmen, he was different than when he pulled himself together at Gila Flats. And
was he?
Well, yeah. I mean, if not, then he would have immediately said, oh, screw this. I'm heading to Mars, man. So there was a gradual change. There was something.
Well, yeah, but that was Adrian. I mean, that was Adrian sort of pushing him in that direction, which was, it wasn't a natural evolution for him to all of a sudden, you know what I mean? Like, that was Adrian manipulating him so that he would go to Mars. That wasn't, you know what I mean? Like, that wasn't just him changing because he had powers and all of a sudden he was becoming less and
right.
less.
Well,
that was,
well,
Adrian making him feel isolated, making him feel...
Well, at the end of... I said he would go to, you know, I said go
and,
to Mars.
And throughout
maybe
the whole
what
thing,
I should
I mean,
have said was go away, which is what he did. Go away, create new life.
Well, and it... I mean, you can see pretty early on even him sort of, you know, like, I think the evolution for him was not, it wasn't from him going, oh, well, I'm still, okay, the moment he changed into Manhattan, I think his connection to humanity was lost. I think the change in him was his
learning that he was not John Osterman anymore.
Well, learning that he wasn't Osterman, but caring whether or not other people, caring about what other people felt or thought of him was the difference. He, in the beginning, you see him pretending to act a certain way, pretending to act human, trying to make people feel comfortable around him. By the time he goes to Mars, he doesn't care any longer. It's not that he's become more aloof or more detached. It's that he's tired of pretending to feel. He's, you know what I mean? Like, he's pretending
well,
to be human.
Well, I mean, still, you had other characters say that, hey, look.
But that's because he...
No, have you seen this dude? He's walking around with his dong hanging out.
But once again, it's not a matter of him changing and becoming more aloof. It's him going, I'm not going to try and make you feel better about me any longer. I'm not going to try and make you comfortable any longer. Yeah, because it didn't make any sense to him to wear clothing. He only did it because that's what people expected of him. And as he went along, he just stopped doing it because he didn't care any longer what people thought. It wasn't that he felt differently. It wasn't that he became detached emotionally. He already was. He just didn't care what you thought any longer about it. He didn't want, you know what I mean? It's like basically he was sitting there going, I'm going to pretend to be this certain person so that Lori is comfortable. You know, I'm going to pretend that this is who I am. I'm going to pretend that I have feelings. I'm going to pretend that I really care about her. I'm going to pretend that things matter to me, that what she thinks matters to me. But the reality of it is I don't. And as the book progressed, he just stopped pretending any longer. I think you're looking at it like he became more and more detached as the book went along. But I don't think that was the case. I think the moment he became John Osterman, he was detached. And it just was like letting go of all these things that he felt like he had to pretend to be when he really wasn't.
The only reason I say that is because I thought that it was
Lori somewhat... says that. She does, absolutely. She sits there and says he's become less and less detached. He no longer is human. But that's her perspective of it because in the beginning, he's making her feel comfortable, placating her, telling her what she wants to feel. All right. But the reality is, he already knows she's dust. She's dead. She's gone. He's already seen her death. She does not exist. It doesn't, none of that matters. He is just, you know what I mean? And so it's just him letting go of all the bullshit humanity, you know, sort of narcissistic stuff that we, you know, that we put on ourselves. He didn't have that. He was just doing it to make her feel better. He didn't give a shit.
Well, let's see what J. Michael Straczynski does in the future issues on this. Maybe it'll be, you know, I don't know, less introspective of Dr. Manhattan and more, I don't know, reactive to something that happens, you know, other than...
I hope not.
Oh, God.
I enjoyed this a lot. I thought it was extremely well done. And, yeah, so far, I think it's my favorite of the Before Watchmen books. And but at the same time, I don't... I can understand it not being easily palatable for everyone or, you know... something that people would maybe.
Well,
enjoy.
I mean, and, you know, look, it's a taste thing. It's not.
Right.
It's not that all those people.
No, absolutely.
We're not getting something. It's just that this isn't. This rose does not smell good to me.
Oh, that's fine. I mean, like I said, it's not, you know.
So, what did you think of the art, real quick?
Oh, I thought the art was great. I mean, Adam Hughes, like, you know, like I said, the only thing for me is that he's so. Refined at this point, he has so much perfected his style that it can become a little cold. But I think for this book it works. I mean, that's Dr. Manhattan anyway. I mean, you know, he is sort of a perfect reflection of what we think he made. But that, you know, I was going to bring that up. Like, okay, so he's blue. For some reason, and he's naked all the time, and he gives himself, like, you know, a godlike body, but then his donger's not that, you know, like,
it's average.
It's kind of average. Like, you know, I would think if you're going to give yourself, like, giant pecs and rippling muscles and everything, it's like, why wouldn't, you know, you just go the whole way, man?
You know? Well, it kind of makes you feel good about things.
Dr. Manhattan's.
Maybe that's what it's supposed to look like, you know?
I thought that one of the interesting comments in here was when Hollis is talking to him at that party and he says, "You don't ever age, do you?" And he said, "Well, this is how I see myself, so that's that's what I project from my body. You know, like this is who I am because it's how I see myself, so my appearance doesn't change because I control every atom,
Yeah, I like that. I mean,
that was pretty cool, yeah. I thought.
Regarding the art, I thought it was perfect. I mean, Adam Hughes, you know, there's not a lot to say. I mean, he's really an accomplished artist.
Yeah.
The only as an artist, the only thing that, you know, if I were to try to search and find one critique, there's this thing that he and a lot of other artists that come from, like the Dodsons, or is it Terry Dodson? There's another artist that he kind of got his start doing Adam Hughes style pictures, but they all
Cho, Michael Cho,
perhaps.
Or I mean Frank Cho, not Michael Cho, Frank Cho, yeah, Frank Cho and Dodsons and yeah, they all. I mean, it's a pinup. It's a very, you know, it's a very illustrative, you know, black outline.
Yeah, that's the thing that gets me is the use of the heavy black outline and then go in and use like a line hold to change the color.
Right.
Sometimes that can, it kind of distracts me. And I don't think it's a poor choice to do that, but I don't know. It's just something that I keep noticing. And, it goes from these stark lines to these real subtle lines on the inside. It's something that I keep seeing over and over, and it pulls me out of the story a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's the contour line, of the silhouette of the character is a black outline, and then yeah, you have your interior lines, which are generally thinner, and you know, sometimes they're like you said, the
color
hold, their color holds done in Photoshop, that kind of thing. It's a definite stylistic choice, I think, you know, and you see a bunch of people kind of do that. I like it. I mean, I've done some of that kind of thing in my own work a little bit. I mean, personally, I prefer a little grittier stuff, but I mean, what can you say about Adam Hughes?
He's the man for sure.
And I think it works with this too, because it's sort of like it has a classic style to it. It has a classic feel to it, but it's also very I don't know, it's also very cutting edge too at the same time. Like, he can do either, you know. It's like he can do like a 50s pinup style, and then he can do a very modern style at the same time. It's an interesting blend of the two.
He reminds me of Norman Rockwell as far as composition.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, just, you know, especially when he does classic American.
Right, right.
You know, when Osterman's a boy and he's opening the... I mean, there's just something very...
Well, he does this sort of...
Rockwellian about...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the... I don't know. Yeah, I agree. I don't know what it is exactly.
Every move, every position people are in is almost a well thought out. I don't want to say exaggerated, but just the perfect. If you're bending over to pick up something, it's the perfect,
right?
You know, pose
to bend over and pick up something.
Full of character and all kinds of stuff. So.
Yeah, there's an elegance to everything
that
he does.
You're digging stuff out of your teeth. It's the most cute, quaint.
Perfect stuff out of your teeth shot you could do. Taylor Crimson Corsair, have we just given up on that story at this point?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be going anywhere for me. I've not really enjoyed it. I don't know that I can muster through two pages. I mean, I can't even get through two pages of it, an issue. You know, so it's pretty bad when you can't get through two pages. But
yeah,
we didn't read that. Oh well, too bad. All right, so overall, you did not like the issue too much. It was too much thinking for your Atlanta,
well, you know,
for your hillbilly brain. Is that what it is?
What an insult! Jesus. No, it was too. It was just too thick. It was too much. It's just too much.
Just made you have to think. You don't want to have to think when you're reading. You want to just have it spoon-fed to you.
Jesus.
Like a chimpanzee in a diaper. You just want your baby
like,
bottle.
Speaking of throwing poop. Jeez.
All right. Well, I enjoyed it. You didn't enjoy it as much.
Didn't enjoy it.
I'm obviously, you know, a lot smarter than you. So we'll just...
Give
Let's
it
get
a rest.
That. All right. Sorry. And that, I guess that's it. I'd be interested to see what other people have to think of it.
Everyone else, only you. You and Dr. Manhattan like this story because you're kind of aloof.
Detached.
Yeah.
Emotionally compromised.
Walking around with your dong hanging out.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not wearing any pants right now, just in
Did you paint yourself blue?
Yeah, absolutely. Good thing this isn't a video podcast.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding about all that. I do like, I'm nerdy in that way. Like, I like, it's sort of like a faux, it gives me the sense of, like, I'm learning something, or, like, I'm actually intelligent, you know, like, to be able to kind of contemplate about, you know, physics. It's not really physics. It's sort of
I've read other books, and I'm not trying to slice J. Michael Straczynski's ankles with a razor, but I've read other cerebral books. Grant Morrison comes to mind, that they're more eloquently laid out, and there's an economy of verse to it. And that's not happening here, and it's got nothing to do with, oh, you know, I get this because, you know, I just get it. And what it has to do with is just, I don't want to say poor writing, but maybe, you know, a little bit.
I would argue with you on that, but
you are. It's
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what? I wanted us to have a difference where I went one way and you went the other. So
there you go. So I think you see you had said that last week, and I think
you know what? Maybe
I think you pre that was a that
I
was
looked
predestined.
In the box and kind of planted. The
I think maybe you, by observing the fact that you wanted not to like it, you changed your opinion on it before it even happened. You know, so there you go.
There you go.
Blow your mind a little bit with that one. All right. Well, thank you all for listening. We will be back next week with – what's next week? I forgot. Any idea what next week is? What's the next
– No.
Week? I don't know what the anyway.
– I think it's Minuteman 3 maybe.
Is that what it is? Okay.
I think so.
Oh, wait. Here, I can look it up in the issue. I think it says –
It is.
Is it Minuteman 3?
Yeah, it comes out August 29th.
Okay. So Minuteman 3, we'll be back with that. Thank you to Discount Comic Book Service for sponsoring this episode. As always, you can reach us at aroundcomics.com. You can email us at info@aroundcomics.com. You can tweet us at aroundcomics.
Or Braxton 9.
Braxton 9, the number 9. Or Brian Salazar, Brian with an O. You can visit me at briansalazar.com. As my personal website with stuff on there, mostly like my workouts and.
You know, I never said my blog, Braxoblog, Braxoblog.com.
Braxo blog?
Braxo blog.com. I haven't added anything to it in a while, though. So.
Yeah, my site is mostly, well, it's some of my art and stuff, but mostly it's just crap. But you can go check it out. I will be, and I think you will be, at the Cincinnati Comic Expo next month in September, the end of September sometime, 22nd, hopefully. Are you still planning on going?
Yeah, 23rd, maybe 22nd. I'm still planning on going.
All right. Are you going to pick me up on the way?
I can. Wait a minute. You're above.
It'd be a long drive for you.
A loop.
You can check out, I think it's CincinnatiComicExpo.com, for guest lists and all that good stuff, but we will be there set up recording and all that.
Hanging out with our blue dongs, you know, we're going to be at the con like we are when we record
naked and
this whole time, every episode we record in the nude so we can get that. We're loose, you know, we got easy recall. And it works, you know, a cup of coffee and wear no clothes, you have better recall.
Total recall.
Yeah, little known fact.
I use it. That's
I used to do it to take tests.
Just go to school and no pants.
Well, you have to take online classes. Does that work?
Or you get arrested.
Get expelled.
I rarely.
All right, so we wear clothes. I'm wearing a t-shirt.
But no pants.
No pants. Just t-shirt.
I don't really want to know any more about your habits at home. Your strange southern ways.
You don't want to open this door.
All I said was I would think that Dr. Manhattan would give himself a bigger dong. That's all I said. What?
It always comes down to his dong, doesn't it?
Well, essentially, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of tough to not just, you know, mention it at least.
Stare.
In passing. It's kind of hard not to stare at the panel. I just look at the panel and go, oh my God. It's so blue.
Avert your eyes.
All right, enough babbling from us. It's late. I'm tired. It's hot. And that's it. We're done. We'll see you next week. Thank you for listening.
See ya.
Adios, motherfuckers.